Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. Started in Cleveland, Ohio 50 years ago. That's right, the year 1971. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to our live line right now and welcome one of our regulars, Mr. Dorsey Hager, who is the executive director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. That's a mouthful. Website is columbusconstruction.org. Twitter handle, you can follow him there at BuildCentralOH. Hey, Dorsey, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me, Flash. Happy Friday, and we're staring the 4th of July right in the face, so it's a good weekend.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. Boy, June just flew by. My gosh, it's this year, half the year is already over. It's hard to believe. Dorsey, I know you want to give us an update. We have a bipartisan infrastructure bill, more on the PRO Act. I know labor is stepping up its game there. There's some political news in Franklin County you want to get into, but the story that not just America, but the world is watching right now is what the heck happened to that condo collapse in Miami, right on the beachfront there. I mean, wow. I mean, that kind of stuff just doesn't happen. Dorsey, I know you've been involved in the trades for, what is it, over a quarter of a century right now. There's got to be some scuttlebutt among our union brothers and sisters on this. What's the latest? What are you hearing right now?
You're absolutely right. I mean, any of your local news stations, any of your national news stations, that seems to still be the headline every day. I'm going to say something right now, and I'm trying to say it the best way I can without being insensitive, but there's no good way to say it. You know, after 7 days, it's very hard to make it without food, without water. So pretty soon I have a really haunting feeling that this 149 missing, that instead of a humanitarian thing where they're trying to like find survivors, it's going to be more of a recovery thing, which is horrible. But with that being said, it's been the number one lead story, the local and national news. I mean, no matter what your politics are, no matter who you agree with or don't disagree with, it is finally nice to see government officials, both on the local, state, and federal level, working together to try to clean up this tragedy and try to save as many people as they can. I mean, there's been lots of input from Biden and the federal administration. There's been a lot of input from the state. There's also been a lot of input from the city and also the county. And I hope that they, you know, can still find some survivors. And I can hope and pray that there's survivors there. But it's obviously not looking good. You know, a lot of things that our guys are saying is obviously, you know, in the United States with our construction standards and stuff, you don't see things like this happening. This is a rarity. This is bad. But then you start reading, and like I said, I know right now they're trying to find survivors, and then, you know, there'll come a time to point fingers and try to figure out how it happened, and I think that time is coming pretty soon. But it's unfortunate the things that we're hearing, you know, that the person that services the pool was there just a few weeks ago, saw standing water, deteriorating concrete, iron and rebar that was exposed due to the recession of some of the foundation and stuff. And then there was a report as recent as 2018 that said that a structural engineering company came in and said there were some deficiencies with the building and that some immediate repairs needed to be done, and it was $9 million. The condo board obviously punted on that, didn't address it. So it's just a tragedy. It's horrible, and it's horrible that many people are going to lose their life and basically a building collapse. And then, you know, back to the humanitarian part about it, I saw a young man that was interviewed the other day, and his grandparents are still missing. And up until a few days ago, from his grandmother's phone, he was getting about 16 phone calls a day from her phone. And of course he would, you know, and answer it, hoping to hear some good news, and it would just be buzzing on the other end. And he contacted the cell phone company, and they said it was probably just a malfunction and an error, and that her phone obviously was not having service, and for some reason it was ringing him, but that didn't help him. But to hear about him, you know, the last 6, 7, 8, 9 days, every day his cell phone ringing and going off, and it's his grandmother calling him, is kind of really morbid and really terrible, but it's like you said, it's all over the news. It's terrible. And the guys that I talk to in the building trades, we just don't see that. And now we've seen that, and it makes you wonder, you know, as we talk about infrastructure and as we talk about roads and bridges, but also schools and hospitals and senior centers and these places, you know, there's the day of reckoning is coming, and it might already be here. I think I've said on the past, I live in a rural county, Union County, and 18 of our bridges are there to be repaired. We just got to have the county money and the resources to do it. So it's unfortunate that school buses and stuff are driving over these roads and bridges, but we haven't even started to talk about some of the buildings, some of the facilities that obviously need repair and need upkeep. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I know the investigation is going to take a long time. It could even take years. But the lesson to be learned here is you cannot ignore, like you pointed out, the infrastructure. Nothing lasts forever. I mean, over time, things crumble. It needs repair. And this is a good segue to talk about our infrastructure. I know you've been monitoring what's going on with this bipartisan deal that the Republicans and the Democrats, and I know our Rob Portman, senator from the state of Ohio, was involved in that. In fact, I think he was one of the leaders on that. Now, it's not what Biden wanted, but I'm just wondering, and it's not a done deal yet either. They got to get buy-in from the entire GOP. But what's your reaction to it? Is this like a down payment? I know some are calling it that. I'd like to hear what Dorsey Hager has to say.
Yeah, I think it's a down payment. I mean, like you said, we have to have something that everybody can agree on and at least get the ball rolling on some of this. But I do believe that it's a down payment. I don't think it comes anywhere close to addressing not only the issues that we're having in basic fundamental themes of infrastructure, like we talk about roads, bridges, schools, the digital divide with lack of internet and stuff like that. I don't think it even comes close to addressing a lot of that. But then, you know, some of the things that the Democrats and Biden want to touch on is, you know, helping people have the ability to get back into the workforce post-COVID. And a lot of that deals with FMLA, the ability to be able to take care of your family without risk of being separated from your job or whatever. Or, you know, I know a lot of people, and I work with a lot of people who have one or two kids, and you know, their spouses, whether it be their wife or their husband, took off during COVID to stay with the children because of the cost of healthcare. And now they're getting ready to make a long-term decision that they're going to do that and just go back to being a one income family because of the cost of childcare and stuff. And it's horrible, and it needs to be addressed. I don't know if it gets addressed in the infrastructure, and it seems like it's not, because it seems like they've bargained that out. And I know that Biden had a misstep this weekend where he spoke that he was not going to entertain it unless it had, you know, dealing with getting people back in the workforce and stuff, especially when it comes to FMLA. But he's walked that back, and it seems like Portman is going to go to the Republicans and Manchin's going to go to the Democrats, and they're going to try to round up enough votes and try to get this passed. Manchin has said that he feels pretty confident that they can get the 60 votes. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to be really interesting. And it's going to be interesting to see how business and big business get involved. You know, we were talking about infrastructure here on a local level, and the city of Columbus, you know, we're the second largest city in the Midwest behind Chicago. We're the 14th largest city in the country. It looks like that the way things are trending, we're going to pass San Francisco by the end of the year to be the 13th largest city. But we're the largest city in the United States without light rail or mass transit. And, you know, you think about that. So when you talk to local city leaders and administration, I think a lot of them would like to go to light rail and some mass transit to help keep up with the growth in Columbus, Franklin County, and Central Ohio. But where do we start? How do we pay for it? And also, so another issue, if you're going to do any kind of mass transit, you're going to have to reinforce, you're going to have to reinvest in a lot of roads, bridges, which we've been talking about, freeways and stuff. And we're not so sure here in Columbus how good our water lines and our sewer systems are. So if you get down there and you're digging and you see that you need to replace a lot of water pipes and stuff like that, you know, that's going to add to the cost, and it can make it really tough. So where does government, where does the public, and where does the big business and a lot of these companies that are going to benefit from having better structure because it's going to make them be easier and more lucrative to do business. Where do they kind of buy in, and where do we kind of to do these things? You know, I remember a story from a long time ago when Oscar Goodman was mayor of Las Vegas. The corner there of the Las Vegas Boulevard and Sahara, they wanted to have escalators and overhead walkways to connect, you know, Excalibur, MGM Grand, New York, and the Tropicana, and they wanted the city to pay for it. And Oscar Goodman's like, okay, he's like, I got a better idea though. He's like, underground tunnels are a lot cheaper, and the city of Vegas will pay to install those. Well, of course, they're not cheaper, and he was making a point. And the point he was making is, you know, this is going to benefit you guys. You don't want underground tunnels because you want pedestrians to be able to see the bright lights and be brought into your casinos. We're going to do overhead, but you guys are going to help pay for it too. You're going to benefit. And I think we're coming to that some kind of reckoning here pretty soon where we're going to have to do something to be able to pay for all this, but it does definitely need to be done.
That was a pretty slick move on his behalf for what he just said. I got to hand it to him.
Yeah.
That was good. I remember talking about Amtrak. There was a, and I don't know if this was part of the infrastructure bill or not, of connecting like Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati, and you being in the state capital. Is there any discussion on that right now?
I haven't heard a lot of discussion about it, but you're right. They have been talking about Amtrak and connecting the three C's, which I think would be great for everybody involved. And again, it would help, you know, with our infrastructure and stuff. I mean, think about it. You have people in Cleveland. You have people in Cincinnati that come to Columbus for meetings or come to the State House or whatever. How nice would it be to get on a train 7 o'clock in the morning, have your paper, your laptop, do whatever, and then the 8:15, you're pulling into the station and you're starting your work day. And then at 5 o'clock that day, you're able to go back, and the wear and tear your car, the traffic, the everything that comes with it. And also the wear and tear on your body from the drive up and down 71 is not there. So I think it's something that they do need to look at. They do need to address. I think there is money in there for the expansion of Amtrak and the infrastructure bill. We just got to see what comes out once they finally do vote on it.
There you go. All right, my buddy, I got to take a quick break here. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line. He is with the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Also on the show, Sue McConnell is going to give us an update on some scams that are happening all around America. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens. Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute and do this. Sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We certainly appreciate a 5-star rating. It's hard to believe it's over a year now that we started this podcasting, and it's really taken off in America. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. He's one of our regular guests. Dorsey, talk to me about the PRO Act here. I'm picking up more and more information that the labor is trying to push this over. We still have some senators on the fence. Middle Ohio, Central Ohio, I know there's some union hostile areas in the state of Ohio, let's be honest. But what are you hearing in that neck of the woods? I'd like to get an update from your perspective. Go ahead.
I think it's going to be interesting to see if it's going to get a vote in the Senate. I hope it does get a vote in the Senate. Of course, everybody's talking about the filibuster and how that's going to weigh in. I think it would be very difficult to get 60 votes on the PRO Act right now. So maybe they're waiting till after they just decide to do something with the filibuster, and then I think the PRO Act could possibly get an easier chance at succeeding. But let's face it, I mean, since Reagan fired the air traffic controllers in the early 80s, everything from then has went downhill for labor. And outside of the Biden administration coming in, getting rid of some anti-labor lawyers that were on the National Labor Relations Board, labor hasn't had a lot of victories in the last 40 years. The PRO Act would be huge, and I think it would help turn the tables on some of these businesses and on some of the unscrupulous things that they do to keep labor unions out and try to turn the corner and start the labor movement again and increasing labor membership, because, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats and can help a lot of people gain in a lot better wages and benefits and stuff. Locally here, a lot of people are in support of the PRO Act. A lot of the local legislators I talk to, I'm dealing with Lauren Rummel at the county right now. The county is getting ready to do a proclamation in support of the PRO Act. She wants me to come down to the county commissioner's meeting, speak in favor of that, obviously, which I told her I would. I know city council, led by President Shannon Harden and Pro Tem Liz Brown, and, of course, Rob Dorn's our guy on city council. They did a great job doing a proclamation a couple months ago in support of the PRO Act. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I like what Speaker Pelosi's doing, especially with the investigation of the insurrection January 6th. She said she's not waiting anymore for bipartisanship. She's going to have a committee, and she's going to go forward with it. I hope she decides to do that and to press the Senate on a vote for the PRO Act, too, and maybe those people in the Senate can hopefully get that going as well, because I do think that support of that and passing of the PRO Act would be hugely helpful for labor, and I think it would help a lot of people in the working class here in Columbus and Central Ohio.
Dorsey, if you don't mind, I know you're in the middle of politics in Central Ohio. Maybe you can give us an update on what's going on with the Franklin County Commissioner. Apparently, Marilyn Brown, who is the current commissioner, is retiring. What's the story there?
Yeah, so Marilyn was elected in 2006 and came on the county commission in 2007. And I know that I've said this lots of times on your show, but it still holds true today. When it comes to Marilyn Brown, Kevin Boyce, and John O'Grady, there is no better pro-labor group of county commissioners anywhere in the state than right here in Franklin County. Marilyn called me a few weeks ago, obviously very saddened. She's had some issues in her family, some health issues where she needs to devote more time taking care of her mother and her daughter who are experiencing some health issues. So her career has came to an end. She would be up on the ballot again in 2022. So she wanted to make this announcement now, so that somebody could be chosen in her place and then have time to get their feet wet and also hopefully run a successful reelection in 2022. So numerous people came out of the woodwork expressing interest in the position. Mike Shattuck, who works for Mayor Ginther at City Hall, came out early and was interested. Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy, who's clerk of courts, came out and was interested. But at the end of the day, I think there was a total of 12 people that officially put their name in the hat. And last Thursday, the Franklin County Democratic Party Central Committee, they're tasked, you know, under the rules of the Ohio Revised Code of picking the replacement. The county party gets to pick the replacement for the member of the party that's in charge. So they got to meet last week, and as, you know, all the calls were being made and the vote counting and the jockeying and the politicking, everybody dropped out except for State Representative Eric Crowley. And then City Council Pro Tem Liz Brown, the daughter of Sherrod Brown, who I think you said you're having on the show today as well. So, but it was a very close vote. They both worked really hard. I think the final tally was Erica Crowley was elected by Central Committee by a total of 9 votes. Liz Brown, you can't say enough great things about Liz. I mean, from the very first day she walked into my office about 12 years ago and talked to myself, some of the managers and agents, I mean, you could just tell that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Liz understands labor. She grew up in union halls and being with her dad and speaking to labor unions, and she understands the importance of the labor movement. So even though she didn't get elected the position she was seeking, she's still going to be solid and be there at City Council, a huge advocate for the working people of Columbus and Central Ohio. But big congratulations to Erica Crowley. For many who don't know her, she burst on the scene 2 years ago. She won Ohio's 26th House District, which is southeastern and eastern Columbus. She's a great representative for that district. She's originally from Youngstown. She's the first member of her family to graduate from college. She went and got a Bachelor's of Arts degree in criminology from Cleveland State, Master's degree in public administration in Walden University, and ended up graduating in 2017 with a law degree from Capital University. And she was able to do this, hard work ethic. She's also a vet. She served in the Navy. So, you know, she's been a big advocate at the State House, too, for organized labor. Of course, with the huge super majority down there and the Republicans, it's hard for the Democrats to get a lot done. But Erica was able to move a lot of bills and do a lot of things. You know, the budget was just settled a couple of days ago, mm-hmm. and it's getting ready to be signed by Governor Mike DeWine. One of the things that Erica was working closely with us and the Central Labor Council of Central Ohio and also the state AFL-CIO was a uniforms to unions bill. And similar to helmets to hard hats, where veterans returning from active duty service would be able to be placed on the direct path and be aware of these union jobs, whether it's in the building trades or with the Central Labor Council unions like the letter carriers or bus drivers or bus mechanics or garbage truck drivers, whatever. Some of these great paying union jobs that we're having a hard time to find people right now that are have great pay and great benefit packages. Erica was very instrumental in trying to get that union's uniforms bill. She worked her butt off. Unfortunately, it was pulled out of the budget at the last minute, but I'm sure there'll be somebody down there to carry the water and try to get it in the future. But, you know, we're blessed here in Columbus, Central County, Central Ohio, and Franklin County to have two rock stars like Liz Brown and Erica Crowley. You know, whoever Central Committee picked was going to do a wonderful job, and I think Erica's going to do a great job. And like I said, I know Liz is disappointed, but we still have her at City Council, and it's like County Commissioner John O'Grady said, Liz Brown has a bright future ahead of her, as does Erica as well. So it's going to be interesting working with Erica at the county as opposed to working with her at the state house. And it's going to be great to keep working with Liz. I testified this week at a hearing Liz was holding for city council on contractor pre-qualification. So it's great to have a friendly face of labor on that council. And it's great to have those relationships, but can't reiterate enough. Like I said, we were in a great position to have two great candidates and Erica came out and she's going to do a wonderful job there.
Well, it's always good to have the right people on the right side of the fence, and that's one thing you do very, very well, my man. Very, very well. Dorsey, we're just about out of time here. I'm going to let you go. I know you want to get a jump start on the holiday weekend. Any big plans for this 4th of July weekend?
Swimming, baseball, some hot dogs, probably a few cold beverages, no matter how cold it gets down here on Saturday. Tomorrow dropping down to 76. I know it's nothing like the 94, 95, 96 we've had the last couple of days, but you know, so it's like an old story. I saw an old guy in a bar once and it was a hot day and he was drinking a cold beer. And I said, what are you doing drinking a cold beer on such a hot day? He says, it cools you down. I said, well, 6 months ago it was 10 degrees and you were sitting in that same chair drinking that same cold beer. And he goes, well, on a cold day, it warms you up. So it works both ways. So that's what we'll try to do. No matter how cold gets tomorrow, I'll still have a cold beer. So
there you go. We'll bring up this conversation in January, okay?
There we go. See if it's the same. Exactly. So.
All right, my friend. You take care, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next month, all right?
All right. Great talking to you. Have a great 4th of July weekend, Flash, and let's hope the Reds and the Indians keep playing good baseball so we can enjoy the rest of our summer before we start heading into Browns mini camp and Browns football, all right?
There you go. We're excited about that one. All right, my friend, we're gonna run along here. Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, columbusconstruction.org. Twitter handle is Build Central O.